This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Tangled by Emma Chase. Read by Sebastian Yore.
Chapter 1. Do you see that unshowered, unshaven heap on the couch? The guy in the dirty gray t-shirt and ripped sweatpants? That's me, Drew Evans. I'm not usually like this. I mean, that really isn't me. In real life, I'm well-groomed, my chin is clean-shaven, and my black hair is slicked back at the sides in a way I've been told makes me look dangerous but professional. My suits are handmade. I wear shoes that cost more than your rent. My apartment? Yeah, the one I'm in right now. The shades are drawn, and the furniture glows with a bluish hue from the television. The tables and floor are littered with beer bottles, pizza boxes, and empty ice cream tubs. That's not my real apartment. The one I usually live in is spotless. I have a girl come by twice a week. And it has every modern convenience, every big boy toy you can think of. Surround sound, satellite speakers, and a big screen plasma that would make any man fall on his knees and beg for more. The decor is modern, lots of black and stainless steel, and anyone who enters knows a man lives there. So, like I said, what you're seeing right now isn't the real me. I have the flu. Influenza. Have you ever noticed some of the worst sicknesses in history have a lyrical sound to them? Words like malaria, diarrhea, cholera. Do you think they do that on purpose? To make it a nice way to say you feel like something that dropped out of your dog's ass? Influenza. Has a nice ring to it, if you say it enough. At least I'm pretty sure that's what I have. That's why I've been holed up in my apartment the last 7 days. That's why I turned my phone off, why I've gotten off the couch only to use the bathroom or to bring in the food I order from the delivery guy. How long does the flu last, anyway? 10 days? A month? Mine started a week ago. My alarm went off at 5 a.m., like always. But instead of rising from the bed to go to the office where I'm a star, I threw the clock across the room, smashing it to kingdom come. It was annoying anyway. Stupid clock. Stupid beep, 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 beeping. I rolled over and went back to sleep. When I did eventually drag my ass out of bed, I felt weak and nauseous. My chest ached. My head hurt. See? The flu, right? I couldn't sleep anymore, so I planted myself here, on my trusty couch. It was so comfortable I decided to stay right here, all week. Watching Will Ferrell's greatest hits on the plasma. Anchorman, the legend of Ron Burgundy's on right now. I've watched it 3 times today, but I haven't laughed yet. Not once. Maybe the 4th time's the charm, huh? Now there's a pounding at my door. Frigging doorman. What the hell is he here for? He's going to be sorry when he gets my Christmas tip this year, you can bet your ass. I ignore the pounding, though it comes again. And again. Drew! Drew, I know you're in there. Open the goddamn door. Oh, no. It's the bitch. Otherwise known as my sister, Alexandra. When I say the word bitch, I mean it in the most affectionate way possible, I swear. But it's what she is. Demanding, opinionated, relentless. I'm going to kill my doorman. If you don't open this door, Drew, I'm calling the police to break it down, I swear to God. See what I mean? I grasp the pillow that's been resting on my lap since the flu started. I push my face into it and inhale deeply. It smells like vanilla and lavender, crisp and clean and addictive.
Drew, do you hear me?
I pull the pillow over my head. Not because it smells like her, but to block out the pounding that continues at my door.
I'm taking out my phone. I'm dialing.
Alexandra's voice is whiny with warning, and I know she's not screwing around. I sigh deeply and force myself to get up from the couch. The walk to the door takes time. Each step of my stiff, aching legs is an effort. Friggin' flu. I open the door and brace myself for the wrath of the bitch. She's holding the latest iPhone up to her ear with one perfectly manicured hand. Her blonde hair is pulled back in a simple but elegant knot, and a dark green purse the same shade as her skirt hangs from her shoulder. Lexi's all about the matching. Behind her, looking appropriately contrite in a wrinkled navy suit, is my best friend and co-worker, Matthew Fisher. I forgive you, doorman. It's Matthew who must die.
Jesus Christ!
Alexandra yells in horror.
What the hell happened to you?
I told you this isn't the real me. I don't answer her. I don't have the energy. I just leave the door open and fall face first onto my couch. It's soft and warm, but firm. I love you, couch. Have I ever told you that? Well, I'm telling you now. Though my eyes are buried in the pillow, I sense Alexandra and Matthew walking slowly into the apartment. I imagine the shock on their faces at its condition. I peek out from my cocoon and see that my mind's eye was spot on.
Drew?
I hear her ask, but this time there's concern woven throughout the one short syllable. Then she's pissed again.
For God's sake, Matthew, why didn't you call me sooner? How could you let this happen?
I haven't seen him, Lex, Matthew says quickly. See, he's afraid of the bitch, too.
I came every day. He wouldn't open the door for me.
I sense the couch dip as she sits beside me.
Drew,
she says softly. I feel her hand run gently through the back of my hair.
Honey?
Her voice is so achingly worried, she reminds me of my mother. When I was a boy and sick at home, Mom would come into my room with hot chocolate and soup on a tray. She would kiss my forehead to see if it still burned with fever. She always made me feel better. The memory and Alexandra's similar actions bring moisture to my closed eyes. Am I a mess or what? I'm fine, Alexandra, I tell her, though I'm not sure if she hears me. My voice is lost in the sweet-scented pillow. I have the flu. I hear the opening of a pizza box and a groan as the stench of rotting cheese and sausage drifts from the container.
Not exactly the diet of someone with the flu, little brother.
I hear further shuffling of beer bottles and garbage, and I know she's starting to straighten the mess up. I'm not the only neat freak in my family.
Oh, that's just wrong.
She inhales sharply, and judging by the stink that joins the putrid pizza aroma, I'm thinking she just opened a 3-day-old ice cream container that wasn't as empty as I'd thought.
Drew.
She shakes my shoulders gently. I give in and sit up, rubbing the exhaustion from my eyes as I do.
Talk to me, she begs. What's going on? What happened?
As I look at the troubled expression of my big bitch of a sister, I'm thrown 22 years back in time. I'm 6 years old, and my hamster, Mr. Wuzzles, has just died. And just like on that day, the painful truth is ripped from my lungs. It finally happened.
What happened?
What you've been wishing on me all these years, I whisper. I fell in love. I look up to see the smile form. It's what she's always wanted for me. She's been married to Stephen forever, has been in love with him for even longer. So she's never agreed with the way I live my life and can't wait for me to settle down, to find someone to take care of me the way she takes care of Stephen. the way our mother still takes care of our dad. But I told her it would never happen. It wasn't what I wanted. Why bring a book to the library? Why bring sand to the beach? Why buy the cow when you get the milk for free? Are you starting to see the picture here? So I see her beginning to smile when, in a small voice that I don't even recognize, I say, "She's marrying someone else. She didn't want me, Lex." Sympathy spreads across my sister's face like jam on bread, and then determination. Because Alexandra is a fixer. She can unclog drains, patch dented walls, and remove stains from any rug. I already know what's going through her head at this moment. If her baby brother is busted, she'll just put him right back together again. I wish it were that easy, but I don't think all the crazy glue in the world is going to piece my heart back together again. Did I mention I'm a bit of a poet, too? Okay, we can fix this, Drew. Do I know my sister or what? You go take a long, hot shower. I'll clean up this disaster. Then we're going out, the three of us. I can't go out. Hasn't she been listening? I have the flu. She smiles compassionately. You need a good, hot meal. You need a shower. You'll feel better then. Maybe she's right. God knows what I've been doing for the last 7 days hasn't made me feel any better. I shrug and get up to do as she says. Like a 4-year-old with his wooby, I bring my prized pillow with me. On my way to the bathroom, I can't help but think of how it all happened. I had a good life once. A perfect life. And then it all got shot to shit. Oh, you want to know how? You want to hear my sob story? Okay, then. It all started a few months ago, on a normal Saturday night. Well, normal for me, anyway. 4 months earlier. Fuck yeah. That's good. Yeah, like that. See that guy? Black suit? Devilishly handsome? Yeah, the guy getting the blowjob from the luscious redhead in the bathroom stall? That's me. The real me. MBF. Me before flu. Jesus, baby, I'm gonna come. Let's freeze frame here for a second. For those ladies out there who are listening, let me give you some free advice. If a guy who you just met at a club calls you baby, sweetheart, angel, or any other generic endearment, don't make the mistake of thinking he's so into you he's already thinking up pet names. It's because he can't or doesn't care to remember your actual name. And no girl wants to be called by the wrong name when she's on her knees giving you head in the men's room. So, just to be safe, I went with baby. Her real name? Does it matter? Fuck, baby, I'm coming. She removes her mouth with a pop and catches like a major leaguer as I jizz in her hand. Afterward, I move to the sink to clean up and zip up. Redhead looks at me with a smile as she rinses with a travel-sized bottle of mouthwash from her bag. Charming. How about a drink? She asks, in what I'm sure she thinks is a sultry voice. But here's a fact for you. Once I'm done, I'm done. I'm not the kind of guy who rides the same roller coaster twice. Once is enough, and then the thrill is gone, and so is the interest. But my mother did raise me to be a gentleman. Sure, sweetheart. You go find a table. I'll get us something from the bar. Redhead put in quite an effort sucking me off, after all. She's earned herself a drink. After leaving the bathroom, she heads for a table, and I go toward the oh-so-crowded bar. I did mention it was Saturday night, right? And this is R.E.M. No, not R.E.M. REM, like REM sleep, as in when you dream. Get it? It's the hottest club in New York City. Well, at least tonight it is. By next week it will be some other club. But the location doesn't matter. The script is always the same. Every weekend my friends and I come here together but leave separately, and never alone. Don't look at me like that. I'm not a bad guy. I don't lie, I don't sandbag women with flowery words about a future together and love at first sight. I'm a straight shooter. I'm looking for a good time, for one night, and I tell them so. That's better than 90% of the other guys in here, believe me. And most of the girls in here are looking for the same thing I am. Okay, maybe that's not exactly true. But I can't help it if they see me, fuck me, and suddenly want to bear my children. That's not my problem. Like I said, I tell them how it is, give them a good time, and then the cab fare home. Thank you, good night. Don't call me, 'cause I sure as shit won't be calling you. Finally getting through the crowd to the bar, I order two drinks. I take a moment to watch the writhing, twisting bodies melt into each other on the dance floor as the music vibrates all around. And then I see her, 15 feet from where I'm standing, waiting patiently, but looking a bit uneasy amongst the arm-raising, money-waving, alcohol-craving herd, trying to get the bartender's attention. I told you I'm poetic, right? The truth is, I wasn't always. Not until this moment. She's magnificent, angelic, gorgeous. Pick a word, any fucking word. The bottom line is, for a moment, I forget how to breathe. Her hair is long and dark and shines even in the dim light of the club. She's wearing a red backless dress, sexy but classy, that accentuates every perfectly toned curve. Her mouth is full and lush, with lips begging to be ravished. And her eyes. Sweet fucking Christ. Her eyes are large and round and endlessly dark. I imagine those eyes looking up at me as she takes my cock into her hot little mouth. The appendage in question immediately stirs to life at the thought. I have to have her. I quickly make my way over, deciding then and there that she is the lucky woman who'll have the pleasure of my company for the remainder of the night. And what a pleasure I intend to make it. Arriving just as she's opening her mouth to order a drink, I intervene with, "The lady will have..." I look her over to surmise what she would be drinking. This is a talent of mine. Some people are beer drinkers, some scotch and soda, some an aged wine, others are brandy or sweet champagne. And I can always tell who's what. Always. A Veramonte Merlot 2003. She turns to me with a raised brow, and her eyes appraise me from head to toe. Deciding I'm not a loser, she says, "You're good." I smile. I see my reputation precedes me. "Yes, I am. And you're beautiful." She blushes. Actually, turns friggin' pink in the cheeks and looks away. Who blushes anymore? It's goddamn adorable. "So, what do you say we find some place more comfortable and private? So we can get to know each other better." Without missing a beat, she says, "I'm here with friends. We're celebrating. I don't usually come to places like this." "What are we celebrating?" "I just got my MBA and start a new job on Monday." "Really? What a coincidence. I'm a finance guy myself. Maybe you've heard of my firm, Evans, Reinhardt, and Fisher? We're the hottest boutique investment bank in the city, so I'm sure she's duly impressed." Let's just pause here again, shall we? Did you see the rounding of this gorgeous woman's mouth when I told her where I am employed? Did you see the widening of her eyes? That should have told me something. But I didn't notice at the time. I was too busy checking out her tits. They're perfect, by the way. Smaller than what I usually go for, no more than a handful. But as far as I'm concerned, a handful's all you need. My point is, remember that look of surprise. That will make sense later on. Now, back to the conversation. "We have so much in common," I say. "We're both in business. We both like a good red. I think we owe it to ourselves to see where this could go tonight." She laughs. It's a magical sound. Now I should explain one thing here. With any other woman, on any other night, I'd be in a cab by now, with my hand up her dress and my mouth making her moan. No question. For me, this is working for it. And strangely enough, it's kind of a turn-on. I'm Drew, by the way. I hold out my hand. And you are? She holds up her hand. Engaged. Undeterred, I take her hand and kiss her knuckle, grazing it ever so slightly with my tongue. I see my reluctant beauty try to suppress a shiver, and I know, despite her words, I'm getting to her. See, I'm not the type who really listens to what people say. I look at how they say it. You can learn a lot about someone if you just take the time to watch the way they move, the shift of their eyes, the rise and fall of their voice. Doe Eyes may be telling me no, but her body? Her body's screaming, yes, yes, fuck me on the bar. In the span of 3 minutes, she's told me why she's here, what she does for a living, and allowed me to fondle her hand. Those are not the actions of a woman who is not interested. Those are the actions of a woman who does not want to be interested. And I can definitely work with that. I'm about to comment on her engagement ring. The diamond is so small that even on close inspection, it can't be located. But I don't want to offend her. She said she's just graduated. I have friends who had to put themselves through business school, and the loans can be crushing. So I go for a different tactic, honesty. Even better. You don't do places like this? I don't do relationships. We're a perfect fit. We should explore this connection further, don't you think? She laughs again, and our drinks arrive. She picks hers up. Thank you for the drink. I should get back to my friends now. It's been a pleasure. I give her a wicked smile. Baby, if you let me take you out of here, I'll give the word pleasure a whole new meaning. She shakes her head with a smile, as if she's indulging a petulant child. Then she calls over her shoulder as she walks away. Have a good night, Mr. Evans. Like I said, I am typically an observant man. Sherlock Holmes and I, we could hang out. But I'm so enraptured by the view of that sweet ass, I miss it at first. Did you notice? Did you catch the little detail that passed me by? That's right, she called me Mr. Evans, but I never told her my last name. Remember that, too. For the moment, I let the dark-haired mystery woman retreat. I intend to give her some slack, then reel her in, hook, line, and sinker. I plan to pursue her the rest of the night if I have to. She's just that freaking hot. But then Redhead, yep, the one from the men's room, finds me.
There you are! I thought I lost you!
She pushes her body up against my side and rubs my arm intimately.
How about we go to my place? It's just around the corner.
Ah, thanks. But no thanks. Redhead has quickly become a fading memory. My sights are set on better, more intriguing prospects. I'm about to tell her so when another redhead appears beside her.
This is my sister, Mandy. I told her all about you. She thought the three of us could, you know, have a good time.
I turn my gaze on Redhead's sister, her twin, actually. And just like that, my plans change. I know, I know. I said I don't ride the same coaster twice. But twin coasters? Let me tell you, no man would pass up a ride like that. Chapter 2. Have I mentioned that I love my job? If my firm were Major League Baseball, I'd be MVP. I'm a partner at one of the top investment banks in New York City, specializing in media and technology. Yes, yes, my father and his two closest friends started the firm, but that doesn't mean I didn't bust my ass to get where I am, because I did. It also doesn't mean I don't eat, breathe, and sleep work to earn the reputation I have, because I do. What does an iBanker do, you ask? Well, you know in Pretty Woman, when Richard Gere tells Julia Roberts that his company buys up other ones and sells them off piece by piece? I'm the guy who helps him do that. I negotiate the deals, draw up the contracts, manage due diligence, draft credit agreements, and do many other things I'm sure you have no interest in hearing about. Now you're probably asking yourself why a guy like me is quoting a chick flick like Pretty Woman. The answer is simple. Growing up, my mother forced family movie night on her young children every single week. The bitch got to choose the featured presentation every other week. She went through this whole Julia Roberts obsession and shoved it down my throat for like a year. I could recite the goddamn thing verbatim. Though I have to admit, Richard Gere, he's fucking cool. Now, back to my job. The best part about it is the high I feel when I close a deal, a really good deal. It's like winning at blackjack in a Vegas casino. It's like being picked by Jenna Jameson to be in her next porno. There is nothing, and I mean nothing, better. I do the prospecting for my clients, recommend what moves they should make. I know which companies are dying to be bought and which ones need a hostile takeover. I'm the one with the inside information about which media mogul is ready to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge because he spent too much of the company's profits on high-priced hookers. Competition for clients is fierce. You have to entice them, make them want you, make them believe no one else can do for them what you can. It's kind of like getting laid. But instead of getting a piece of ass at the end of the day, I get a big, fat check. I make money for myself and my clients. Lots of it. The sons of my father's partners also work here, Matthew Fisher and Stephen Reinhardt. Yes, that Stephen, the bitch's husband. Like our fathers, the three of us grew up together, went to school together, and now work at the firm together. The old men leave the real work to us. They check in from time to time, to feel like they're still running things, then head out on the country club to get in an afternoon game of golf. Matthew and Stephen are good at the job, too, don't get me wrong. But I'm the star. I'm the shark. I'm the one clients ask for and drowning companies fear. They know it, and so do I. Monday morning, I'm in my office at 9 a.m., same as always. My secretary, the smoking little blonde with a nice rack, is already here, ready with my schedule for the day, my messages from the weekend, and the best damn cup of coffee in the tri-state area. No, I haven't fucked her. Not that I wouldn't love to. Trust me, if she didn't work for me, I'd hit that harder than Muhammad Ali. But I have rules. Standards, you might say. One of them is no screwing around at the office. I don't shit where I eat. I don't fuck where I work. Never mind the sexual harassment issues it would bring up. It's just not good business. It's unprofessional. So, because Erin is the only woman besides my blood relatives who I have platonic interactions with, she is also the only member of the opposite sex I've ever considered a friend. We have a great working relationship. Erin is simply awesome. That's another reason I wouldn't screw her, even if she were spread eagle on the desk, begging for it. Believe it or not, a good secretary, a really good one, is hard to find. I've had girls work for me who were dumber than a whole bucket of dirt. I've had others who thought they could make it just by working on their backs, if you know what I mean. Those are the girls I want to meet in a bar on a Saturday night. Not the kind I want answering my phones Monday morning. So now that you have a little insight, let's go back to my descent into hell. I moved your 1 o'clock lunch with Mecha back to a 4 o'clock meeting, Erin tells me as she hands me a stack of messages. Shit. Mecha Communications is a multi-billion dollar media conglomerate. I've been working on their acquisition of a Spanish-speaking cable network for months, and the CEO, Rodolfo Scuccini, is always more receptive on a full stomach. Why? She hands me a folder. Today, lunch in the conference room. Your father's introducing the new associate. You know how he is about these things. You ever see A Christmas Carol? Of course you have. Some version of it's on some channel somewhere every day before Christmas. Well, you know when the ghost of Christmas past takes Scrooge back in time to when he was young and happy? And he had that boss, Fezziwig, the fat guy who threw the big parties? Yeah, that guy. That's my father. My dad loves this company and sees all his employees as extended family. He looks for any excuse to throw an office party. Birthday parties, baby showers, Thanksgiving luncheons, President's Day buffets, Columbus Day dinners. Need I go on? It's a miracle any actual work gets accomplished. And Christmas? Forget about it. My father's Christmas parties are legendary. Everybody goes home shit-faced. Some people don't go home at all. Last year, we caught 10 employees from a rival bank trying to sneak in, just because the soiree is that frigging fantastic. And it's all done to achieve the atmosphere, the vibe my father wants in this firm. He loves his employees, and they love him right back. Devotion, loyalty, we've got it in spades. That's part of what makes us the best. Because the people who work here would pretty much sell their firstborn for my old man. Still, there are days like today, when I need time to romance a client, that his celebrations can be a royal pain in the ass. But it is what it is. My Monday morning is packed, so I get to my desk and start working. Then, before I can blink, it's 1 o'clock and I'm heading to the conference room. I spot a familiar head of bright orange hair attached to a short, stocky-framed body. That would be Jack O'Shea. Jack started at the firm about 6 years ago, the same year I did. He's a good guy and frequent weekend comrade. Next to him is Matthew, talking animatedly as he pushes a large hand through his sandy-colored hair. I grab my food from the buffet and join them at their table just as Matthew is recounting his Saturday night. So then she breaks out handcuffs and a whip. A fucking whip! I thought I was going to lose it right there, I swear to Christ. I mean, she went to a convent. Actually studied to be a goddamn nun, man. I told you, the quiet ones are always into the kinky shit, Jack adds with a laugh. Matthew turns his hazel eyes to Stephen and tells him, Seriously, dude, you gotta come out with us. Just once, I'm begging you. I smirk at that because I know exactly what's coming. I'm sorry, have you met my wife? Stephen asks, his brow wrinkled in confusion. Don't be such a bitch, Jack ribs him. Tell her you're going to play cards or something. Live a little. Stephen takes off his glasses and wipes the lenses with a napkin as he appears to consider the idea. Right. And when she finds out, and Alexandra will definitely find out, I assure you, she'll serve me my balls on a silver platter, with a nice garlic butter dipping sauce on the side and a good Chianti. He makes a slurping sound a la Hannibal Lecter that has me laughing my ass off. Besides, he gloats, replacing his spectacles and stretching his hands over his head, I got filet mignon at home, boys. I'm not interested in sloppy joes. Pussy, Matthew coughs out, while Jack shakes his head at my brother-in-law and says, Even a nice filet gets old if you eat it every day. Not, Stephen defends suggestively, if you cook it in a different way every time. My baby knows how to keep my meals spicy. I put my hand up and plead, Please, please, just stop there. There are some visuals I don't want in my head. Ever. What about you, Drew? I saw you leave with those twins. Were they real redheads? Jack asks me. I feel the satisfied smile stretch over my lips. Oh yeah, they were real. And then I go on to describe my wild Saturday night in vivid, delicious detail. Okay, let's just stop right now because I can see that judgmental look on your face. And I can hear your high-pitched disapproval, too. What a jerk. He had sex with a girl, well, in this case, two girls, and now he's telling his friends all about it. That's so disrespectful. First of all, if a chick wants me to respect her, she needs to act like someone worth respecting. Second, I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm just being a guy. And all guys talk to their friends about sex. Let me repeat that in case you missed it. All guys talk to their friends about sex. If a guy tells you he doesn't, dump him, because he's lying to you. And another thing, I've heard my sister and her little friends have their chats, too. Some of the things that come out of their mouths could have made Larry fucking Flint blush. So don't act like women don't just talk as much as we guys do, because I know for a fact they do. After expounding on the finer points of my weekend, the talk at the table turns to football and the effectiveness of Manning's offense. In the background, I hear my father's voice as he stands at the front of the room, detailing the grand accomplishments of the newest associate, whose file I didn't bother opening this morning. Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, first in her class, interned with Credit Suisse, blah, blah, blah. The chatter fades away as my thoughts turn to the part of my Saturday night that I didn't bother telling my friends about. The interaction with one brunette goddess, to be exact. I can still see those dark, round eyes so clearly in my head. That luscious mouth. The luminous hair that could not have possibly been as soft as it looked. It isn't the first time her image has popped into my head, unbidden, in the last day and a half. In fact, it seems like every hour a picture of some part of her comes to me, and I find myself imagining what happened to her. Or, more to the point, what could have happened if I had stuck around and gone after her. It's strange. I'm not one to reminisce about the randoms I meet during my weekend adventures. Usually, they fade from my thoughts the moment I escape their beds. But there was just something about her. Maybe it's because she turned me down. Maybe it's because I didn't get her name. Or maybe it was that sweetly toned ass that made me want to grab on and never let go. As the images in my mind turn to focus on that particular feature, a familiar stirring begins in the southern region, if you catch my drift. I mentally shake myself. I haven't gotten a spontaneous hard-on since I was 12. What's up with that? Looks like I'm going to have to call that hottie who slipped me her number in the coffee house this morning. Normally I reserve those kinds of activities for weekends, but apparently my dick would like to make an exception. By this time, I've made it toward the front of the room, in line for the customary handshake of welcome given to all new employees. As I near the head of the line, my father spots me and comes over to greet me with an affectionate slap on the back. "Glad you made it, Drew. This new girl has some real potential. I want you to personally take her under your wing. Help her get her feet wet. You do that, son, and I guarantee you she'll take off and do us all proud." "Sure, Dad. No problem." Great. Like I don't have my own work to take care of. Now I have to hold a newbie's hand as she navigates the dark, scary world of corporate America. That's just perfect. Thanks, Dad. Finally, my turn has come. Her back is to me as I step up. I take in her sleek dark hair that's pulled into a low bun, her tiny petite frame. My eyes drift down her back as she speaks to someone in front of her. On instinct, they fall to her ass and... wait. Wait one goddamn minute. I've seen that ass before. No fucking way. She turns around. Way. The smile on her face broadens as her eyes connect with mine. Endless, shining eyes that I didn't remember dreaming about till just now. She raises a brow in recognition and holds out her hand. "Mr. Evans." I feel my mouth open and close, but no words come out. The shock of seeing her again, here of all places, must have momentarily frozen the part of my brain that controls speech. As the synapses start to function once more, I hear my father saying, "Brooks, Catherine Brooks, she's going places, son, and with your help, she'll be taking us with her." Catherine Brooks, the girl from the bar, the girl I let get away, the girl whose mouth I'm still desperate to feel around my cock. And she works here, in my office, where I have sworn to never, ever screw around. Her warm, soft hand slides perfectly into mine, and two thoughts enter my head simultaneously. The first is, God hates me. The second is, I have been a naughty, naughty boy for most of my life, and this is my payback. And you know what they say about payback, right? Yep, she's one hairy bitch. Chapter 3. I am all about self-determination, will, control. I determine my path in life. I decide my failures and successes. Screw fate. Destiny can kiss my ass. If I want something badly enough, I can have it. If I focus, sacrifice, there is nothing I can't do. What is the point of my posturing, you ask? Why do I sound like the featured speaker at a self-help convention? What exactly am I trying to say? In a nutshell, I control my dick. My dick does not control me. At least, that's what I've been telling myself for the last hour and a half. See me there at my desk, mumbling like a goddamn schizophrenic off his meds? That's me reminding myself of the tenets, the sacred beliefs that have gotten me this far in life, the ones that have made me an uncontested success in the bedroom and in the office, the ones that have never failed me before, the ones that I am dying to throw out the fucking window, all because of the woman in the office down the hall. Catherine, everyone calls me Kate Brooks. Talk about a friggin' curveball. The way I see it, I could still go for the gold. Technically speaking, I didn't meet Kate at work. I met her in a bar. That means she could forgo the label of co-worker and retain the random hookup status she was originally assigned. What? I'm a businessman. It's my job to find loopholes. So, in theory at least, I could definitely nail her and not undermine my own personal laws of nature. The problem with that strategy, of course, is what happens after. The longing glances, the hopeful eyes, the pathetic attempts to make me jealous, the supposedly accidental meetings, the questions about my plans, the seemingly casual walks past my office door, all of which would inevitably escalate into disturbing semi-stalkerish behavior. Some women can handle a one-night stand, others can't. And I have definitely been on the wrong end of those who can't. It ain't pretty. So, you see, no matter how badly I want to, no matter how hard the little head is trying to lead me down that road, it's not the kind of thing I want to bring into my place of business, my sanctuary, my second home. It's not going to happen, period. That's it. End of discussion. Case closed. Kate Brooks is officially scratched off my list of potentials. She is forbidden, untouchable, a no way never. Right next to my friend's ex-girlfriends, the boss's daughter, and my sister's best friends. Well, that last category is a bit of a gray area. When I was 18, Alexander's best friend, Cheryl Phillips, spent the summer at our house. God bless her. That girl had a mouth like a Hoover vacuum. Lucky for me. The bitch never learned of her friend's 2 a.m. visits to my room. There would have been hell to pay. I'm talking fire and brimstone of apocalyptic proportions hell, if she had. Anyway, where was I? Oh, right. I was explaining that I have come to the unequivocal decision that Kate Brooks's ass is the one that I, sadly, am never going to tap. And I'm okay with that. Really. And I almost believe myself. Right up until she shows up at my door. Christ. She's wearing glasses. The dark-rimmed kind. The female version of Clark Kent's. They would be geeky-looking and unattractive on most women, but not on her. On the bridge of that tiny nose, framing those long-lashed beauties, with her hair swept up in that slightly loose bun, they are nothing short of full-out sexy. As she starts to speak, my mind is suddenly filled with every hot teacher fantasy I've ever had. They're playing out in my mind right next to the ones about the seemingly sexually repressed librarian who's really a leather-wearing, handcuff-bearing nymphomaniac. While all this is going on in my head, she's still talking. What the fuck is she saying? I close my eyes to stop myself from staring at her glistening lips, so I can actually process the words coming out of her mouth. Father said you could help me with it. She stops and looks at me expectantly. I'm sorry, I was distracted. You want to sit down and run that by me again? I ask, my voice never betraying the horniness inside me. Once again, to the ladies out there, here's a fact for you. Men pretty much have sex on the brain 24/7. The exact figure is like every 5.2 seconds or some shit like that. The point is, when you ask, what do you want for dinner? We're thinking about screwing you on the kitchen counter. When you're telling us about the sappy film you watched with your girlfriends last week, we're thinking about the porno we saw on cable last night. When you show us the designer shoes you bought on sale, we're thinking how nice they would look on our shoulders. I just thought you'd want to know. Don't shoot the messenger. It's a curse, really. Personally, I blame Adam. Now, there was a guy who had the world by the balls. Walking around naked, a hot chick to satisfy his every whim. I sure hope that apple was tasty, 'cause he really fucked it up for the rest of us. Now we have to work for it. Or, in my case, try desperately not to want it. She sits in the chair across from my desk and crosses her legs. Don't look at the legs. Don't look at the legs. Too late. They're toned, tan, and as smooth-looking as silk. I lick my lips and force my eyes to hers. So, she begins again, I've been working up a portfolio on a programming company, Genesis. Have you heard of them? Vaguely, I answer, looking down at the papers on my desk to stem the flow of indecent images that the sound of her voice calls forth from my deviant mind. I'm a bad, bad boy. Think Kate will punish me if I tell her how bad I am? I know. I just can't help myself. They posted 3 million EBIT last quarter, she says. Really? Yeah. I know it's not earth-shattering, but it shows they have a solid base. They're still small, but that's part of what has made them good. Their programmers are young and hungry. Rumor has it they've got ideas that will make the Wii look more like an Atari, and they have the brains to make them happen. What they don't have is the capital. She stands and leans over my desk to pass me a folder. I'm assailed with a sweet but flowery scent. It's delectable, alluring. Not like the grandma whose perfume practically chokes you to death when she walks by you at the post office. I have the urge to press my face against her neck and inhale deeply. But I resist and open the folder instead. I showed what I have to Mr. Evans, your father, and he told me to run it by you. He thought one of your clients... AlphaCom, I nod. Right. He thought AlphaCom would be interested. I look over the work she's done so far. It's good. Detailed and informative, but focused. Slowly, my brain, the one above my shoulders anyway, starts to shift gears. If there's one topic that has any hope of derailing me from my thoughts about sex, it's work. A good deal. I can definitely smell potential here. It doesn't smell as delicious as Kate Brooks, but it's close. I motion for her to sit back down. She does. This is good, Kate. Very good. I could definitely sell this to Shonson. He's AlphaCom's CEO. Her eyes narrow just a bit. But you'll keep me on board, right? I smirk. Of course. Do I look like the type who needs to steal other people's proposals? She rolls her eyes and smiles. This time, I just can't look away. No, of course not, Mr. Evan. I didn't mean to imply. It's just... You know, first day. Well, I'd say from the looks of this, you're having one hell of a first day. And please, it's Drew. She nods. I lean back in my chair, appraising her. My eyes rake over her from head to toe in a completely unprofessional manner. I know it. But I just can't seem to make myself give a damn. So, celebrating a new job, huh? I ask, referring to her comment at REM on Saturday. She bites her lip, and my slacks tighten as I stir and harden again. If this keeps up, I'm going to have one hell of a case of blue balls when I get home. Yes, new job, she shrugs, then says, I guessed who you were when you told me your name and the name of your firm. You've heard of me? I ask, truly curious. Sure. I don't think there are many in this field who haven't read about Evans, Reinhardt, and Fisher's Golden Boy in Business Weekly,
or on page 6, for that matter.
Her last words refer to the gossip columns on whose pages I frequently appear. If the only reason you blew me off is because I work here, I say, I can have my resignation on my father's desk within the hour. She laughs and then, with a faint blush coloring her cheeks, replies, No, that wasn't the only reason. She holds up her hand to remind me of the almost invisible engagement ring.
But aren't you glad now that I turned you down? I mean, it would have been pretty awkward if something had happened between us, don't you think?
My face is completely serious as I tell her. Would have been worth it. She raises her brows in doubt.
Even though I'm working under you now?
Now, come on. She walked right into that one, and she knows it. Working under me? How in the hell am I supposed to ignore that? Yet I merely cock an eyebrow, and she shakes her head and chuckles again. With a feral smile, I ask her, I'm not making you uncomfortable, am I?
No, not at all. But do you treat all your employees this way? Because I have to tell you, you're leaving yourself wide open for a lawsuit.
I can't help the smile that comes to my lips. She's such a surprise. Sharp, quick. I have to think before I speak to her. I like it. I like her. No, I don't treat all my employees this way. Ever. Only one, who I haven't stopped thinking about since Saturday night. Okay, so maybe I wasn't thinking about her when the twins were double-teaming me. But it's at least partly true.
You're incorrigible,
she says in a way that tells me she thinks I'm cute. I'm a lot of things, baby. Cute isn't one of them. I see something I want, and I go after it. I'm used to getting what I want. You'll never hear a truer statement about me than that. But let's put things on hold for a minute here, okay? So I can give you the full picture. See, my mother, Anne, always wanted a big family. 5, maybe 6 kids. But Alexandra is 5 years older than I am. 5 years may not seem like a lot to you, but to my mother it was a lifetime. The way the story goes, after Alexandra, my mother couldn't get pregnant again. And it wasn't for lack of trying. Secondary infertility, they called it. When my sister was 5, my mother had pretty much given up hope of ever having any more kids. And then guess what? I came along. Surprise. I was her miracle baby, her precious angel from God, her granted wish, her answered prayer. And she wasn't the only one who thought so. My father was thrilled. Just as grateful to have another child, and a son at that. And Alexandra, this was the pre-bitch years, was ecstatic to finally have a baby brother. I was what my family had wanted and waited 5 years for. I was the little prince. I could do no wrong. There was nothing I wanted that I couldn't have. I was the most handsome, the most brilliant. There was no one kinder, no one sweeter than me. I was loved beyond words, doted on, and catered to. So, if you think I'm arrogant, selfish, spoiled, you're probably right. But don't hold it against me. It's not my fault. I am a product of how I was raised. Now that that's out of the way, back to my office. This next part is big. And I think you should know, I want you, Kate. See the flush on her cheeks, the slight surprise on her face? See how her face turns serious, and she meets my eyes and then looks down at the floor? I'm getting to her. She wants me too. She's fighting it. But it's there. I could have her. I could lead her right where she is dying to go. The knowledge makes me swallow a groan as the guy downstairs reacts with a vengeance. I want to walk up to her and kiss her until she can't stand. I want to slide my tongue between those ripe lips until her knees give out from under her. I want to pick her up, wrap her legs around my waist, lean her up against the wall and...
Hey, Drew, there's a traffic jam on 53rd. If you want to make your 4 o'clock, you should get going.
Thank you, Aaron. Way to kill the moment. Awesome, Secretary. Horrible timing. Kate gets up from her chair, her shoulders stiff, her back straight. She inches toward the door and refuses to look me in the eyes.
So, thanks for your time, Mr. Evans. Let me know when you want me.
I raise my brows suggestively at her words. I love that she's flustered, and that I'm the one who did it to her. Still avoiding eye contact, she grimaces slightly.
About AlphaCom and Genesis, let me know what I should do, what you want me to do, you know what I mean.
Before she's out the door, my voice stops her. Kate? She turns to me, her eyes questioning. I point to myself. It's true. She smiles, recovers herself. Her natural confidence finds its way back into her eyes. Then she meets my gaze full on.
Right. I'll see you later, Drew.
Once she's out the door, I say only to myself, oh yes, yes, you will. As I check my briefcase before leaving for my meeting, I realize that this attraction, no, that's not a strong enough word, this need that I have for Kate Brooks isn't just going to go away. I can try and fight it, but I'm only a man, for God's sake. Left unresolved, my desire for her could turn my office, the place I love, into a torture chamber of sexual frustration. I can't let that happen. So, I have three options. I can quit, I can get Kate to quit, or I can entice her to share one profoundly pleasurable night with me. Get it out of both of our systems. Consequences be damned. Guess which one I'm going to pick. Chapter 4. Turns out, I didn't get blue balls after all. I met up with the coffeehouse girl that night. She's a yoga instructor. Nice. What? Come on, don't be like that. I want Kate, no question. But don't expect me to act like a monk until it happens. The thing women don't understand is that a guy can want one woman and still fuck another one. Hell, a guy could love a woman and still fuck 10 others. It's just the way it is. Sex is a release. Purely physical, that's all. At least to men it is. Okay, calm down. Don't start throwing shoes at me or something. At least to this man it is. Better? Maybe you'll understand my point of view if I put it this way. You brush your teeth, right? Well, suppose your favorite toothpaste is Aquafresh, but the store is out. All they have is Colgate. What are you going to do? You're going to use the Colgate, right? You may want to brush with Aquafresh, but when all is said and done, you use what you have to keep those pearly whites clean. See my way of thinking? Good. Now, back to my tale of heartache and pain. I've never seduced a woman before. Shocking, I know. Let me clarify. I've never had to seduce a woman before, not in the typical sense. Usually, it just takes a look, a wink, a smile, a friendly greeting, maybe a drink or two. After that, the only verbal exchange involves short one-word phrases like harder, more, lower. You get the point. So the whole conversing a woman into bed concept is pretty new to me, I'll admit. But I'm not worried. Why not, you ask? Because I play chess. Chess is a game of strategy, planning, of thinking two steps ahead of your next move, of guiding your opponent right where you need her to be. For the 2 weeks following her first day, dealing with Kate, for me, is exactly like playing chess. A few suggestive words, some innocent but seductive caresses. I won't bore you with details of every conversation. I'll just say that things are progressing nicely. Everything is going according to plan. I figure it'll take another week, two tops, till I'm able to claim that golden treasure between her creamy thighs. I already know how it will play out. I've spent hours, in fact, imagining it, fantasizing about it. Want to hear it? It will happen in my office, one night when we're both working late, the only ones left. She'll be tired, stiff. I'll offer to rub her neck, and she'll let me. Then I'll lean down and kiss her, starting at her shoulder, trailing up her neck, tasting her skin